Welcome back to part two.
All right.
I dragged Nathaniel back in here.
I was going to bring my guitar this time since I talked about it last time and play you kind of like a cool opening tune, but it didn't work. But hey, Fred, thank you, Charles Ruttenberg Realty, and your team for having me back. We got some great topics we're going to talk about today. I'm excited.
You're awesome. Thank you, my man.
Yeah, here we go.
As agents that are working with buyers, they want to take advantage of the low rates. They have a lot of questions. Difference between pre-qualification letter and a pre-approval letter. Can you explain that?
Great question. I mean, that's an interesting one. So here's the way I like to think of it. I like to think of it like a pre-qualification is when you have an approval based on a verbal. Somebody calls you up. It's, you know, late in the afternoon or late in the day on the weekend, and you got to get a decision made very, very quickly, and you've got to submit an offer. Pre-qualification is you give me your information over the phone. We're going to go with it based on what you've told me. You have a pre-qualification. To me, a pre-approval is when you've actually reviewed income asset documents, you've pulled credit. I'm facing a little bit of a challenge out there with that the world and consumers don't want to have their credit pulled. I understand that. But to me, that would be more of a pre-qualification if I can't pull your credit. If I'm going off of what you're telling me and I can't physically see the data, but if I can pull your credit, if I can review your income, I can review your assets, that to me is more of a pre-approval.
Right. So one's so kind of like premium paper. The other one's kind of like junk paper.
Yes, that would be okay. You could, yes, or you can go, yeah, that's a good one. I was thinking something different, but that's good.
What else should agents do to prep their buyers with this? Because
buyers
are going to have to overspend on here. And is there a checklist? You guys provide a checklist.
So we do. I really hope that some of the people listening will take an opportunity for some of the Mortgage 101 classes, their prep classes for real estate agents, just things to make you dangerous. Here's what I would like to say to agents out there. You know, when I talk to a consumer on the phone, I ask them, my very first question is, so what are you thinking about what's your price point? Where do you want to be at? Some consumers say, I don't know. Just tell me what I qualify for. That's a loaded question because there's taxes, there's insurance, there's flood zones, there's HOA dues, a very, very loaded question. But what I want to encourage agents to do is at least have a formal or an informal conversation with your consumer to establish a price point. When I talk to someone who wants to buy a home for $225 and they want to buy something in Palm Harbor, it's a single family detached in a pool.
Right.
That's really not realistic.
Right.
Right. So maybe we need to have a conversation more about condos or townhomes, and now HOA dues come into it. So how do agents prep their clients? At least make sure that they are aware as to what's happening in the market in terms of valuations and price points.
Right. And part of the other thing I'm seeing, new builders are increasing the price and they're actually having escalation clause for price increase. We're seeing lumber go up. I talked to a contractor, 2x8x10, last year was running about $333 a board. Now it's running closer to $10. And that can increase the price of a house by $30,000. And now the buyers or the builders are adding that to the buyer's clause in the contract. So that they really need to give the buyers a heads up and, hey, look up maybe
in terms of builders.
We got to maybe qualify you for something $30,000 more to cover that cost. What do you recommend the buyers do? And would your underwriter be able to step in? What steps need to be taken to cover that additional increase in price?
So there's a few things you can do. I mean, one, obviously cash is king. So have a conversation with your buyers and say, in the event that we have to go up and we don't appraise to the number that we need to be at, are you liquid? Can you borrow against your 401k? Are you willing and prepared to do that in the event of an emergency? Or can you borrow proceeds from a family member that can give you some cash? And I really shouldn't use the term borrow. If you're gonna be dealing in a family member providing you funds, that really has to be a gift. So do you have a family member that will gift you funds for a loan? Because you have to make sure it's an eligible source. But one, cash is king.
Right. Two, and now don't trick your grandma and give you that gift later and don't pay her back. That's not
right.
Good.
Yeah, it can't be borrowed funds. It's got to be a true gift. I use that term because I'm confusing that with borrowing against your 401k. You can borrow against your 401k, and that's one of the best ways to do it. So that's one option. In terms of what will an underwriter do, well, as far as if you have, you know, be careful with your clauses on your contract. So if you have a clause that is a no appraisal contingency, obviously whatever the value comes in at, you're going to have to go make up the difference and pay for that. If an appraisal comes in under value, know this, a lending institution will either use the appraised value or the purchase price, whichever is less. So it can be a drastic difference if that appraisal comes in under value. So you have to watch out for that.
Especially if they were having a bad day.
That's could be right now. You know, bear in mind, and my colleagues out there that are mortgage professionals, we don't select our appraisers. Right. It's completely random. But, you know, appraisers are kind of in a tough predicament now, too, right, because there's where at what level do you have over asking? Right. So you're Fred, right, if you're representing me in a transaction and I'm putting in $30,000 over asking, but then Byron steps in and he's putting in $50,000 over asking. Where's the real value of that home, right? So
right,
it's, and we are seeing a lot of appraisals coming in undervalued.
It's kind of what the buyer's willing to pay.
What they're willing to pay, and then in liquidity and cash. Mm-hmm. So it's not as simple as just increasing the loan amount. Now, if somebody puts a lot of money down, we have the ability to increase the loan amount then.
Right.
And then the other option, you know, really would be that, you know, someone, again, watch your contracts very carefully.
Right.
Right. So you have your contingency for appraisals.
Mm-hmm.
You have your contingency, your financing contingency. So if an appraisal comes in undervalued,
right, mm-hmm,
and there's a choice here, if the consumer doesn't have the ability to pay the difference and you don't have an appraisal contingency, there is the financing contingency,
correct,
which means that if Fred is my client, Fred, how are you going to pay the difference of $30,000 here?
I want to touch on the subject,
yeah,
but could we go back real
yes,
quick to
sure,
the new builder? So these homes are taking 9 months to build. During the time when they put the contract in, the prices are lower.
Yes.
And now the costs increase because
yes,
the material price increase. Plus, like you said, what if rates increase another 0.5% or a percentage point? And that creates a monthly increase in the their mortgage. Would it be a wise move? And how far out do you guys do rate locks? And is there a floating rate lock for one-time change? Can you go
great,
into that?
Great question. So, yes. So, look very carefully. Every lender is a little bit different. You can do what's called a long-term lock. Those are generally more expensive. Locks are based on 30-day increments. Mm-hmm. So, the longer you go, the more expensive the rate is going to be. And you may have to pay an upfront non-refundable fee to do a long-term lock.
Do you recommend that in this type of market?
I don't recommend that only because, you know, if I'm talking to someone, I'm thinking, you know, what's the number differential? If you're at 3.2 today, but you could be at hypothetically 3.8, it's not worth paying some of these upfront
fees.
So
instead of the rate lock, could they do point buy down? Could they pay for points instead? Would that be a better
Well, yes,
move?
You could do that. I'm not a big ad. The only mm-hmm. time I ever advocate paying for points is if you're going to be in a property for 7 years or longer.
Is that so the break even, 5 to 7?
Generally, I mean, yeah, 5 to 7 is a good number. I like 7 because you really start to make some good gains there and it makes sense. I mean, a true break even mm-hmm. may be about 5 to 6 years. So
right.
if you think you're going to have a life change, you're going to have to sell or move out, it wasn't worth it.
Right.
So I'm more of an advocate that, you know, if you get rates here or if you have to pay for a higher interest rate somewhere down the road because you're locking in late, at some point you may do a refinance
right.
and the cost to refinance may be cheaper than paying points up front to secure a rate long term.
The bottom line, their rates are cheap. So just go ahead
They're
and get
cheap,
it done.
Yeah. And you know, we're going to see kind of a lower rate market. I mean, again, we don't see something disastrous like getting up in the fives, but you know, the Fed is going to hold these rates down for a while,
Agreed.
Even if you're in the high threes or low fours, still a great place to be.
Right. And with this new administration, it looks like lower, longer. And they also
yes.
have a lot of spending bills coming,
yes.
which is going to stimulate the economy.
Yep.
Going back to the appraisal issue. So we get a low appraisal. What can the agent do? Can they dispute the
they
appraiser?
Can. They can dispute that.
Do they go through you or directly with the appraiser?
Well, they would work through their lender, and then from there we formulate a dispute. Let me be very frank with you. If you're going to dispute an mm-hmm. appraisal, this is strictly non-emotional. It's strictly data. So
right.
unless you have comparables that are identical to the subject in design, appeal, room count, square footage, location, forget it. You're not going to win a dispute. You literally,
right.
it would have to be where the appraiser literally missed a particular comp, and
right.
then you're deeming it is. Now, people tell me all the time, well, logic would dictate, nope, not in the world of appraisals. It's strictly based on data.
Correct. Correct. And the other thing you touched on was the loan approval period. Who keeps their eye on this? Do you guys help the agent with this? Because I know most lenders do not.
Oh, that's a great question. That's a big one. You know, agents, watch out. Like, pay careful attention to your loan approval period. Yes, we do. We here at Security National, we do pay attention
That's
to that.
That's a plus. That's intuitive.
Thank you. We have to be because quite frankly, if you're going to tell me that you're going to, or appraisals are taken in some cases 14 and in some cases 21 days, depending on your market.
Correct.
So if you're talking anywhere from a 10 to 14 day turn on an appraisal,
mm-hmm.
you're 5 days for an inspection, you're now ready into 20 days and
right.
you don't even have a value on your collateral. So I tell people all the time, you got 20 days for your approval date here. I need an extension
mm-hmm.
or be mindful. This thing may come in under value. How are you handling your contingency for appraisal and your financing contingency? So we have to have a conversation.
That is very good. And it's great that you and the agent work together on this because some lenders do nothing. And the agent absolutely, they believe, they go default lender is going to remind them and both sides drop the ball. And at the end of the day, the buyer gets hurt and their escrow becomes
this environment
risk.
Right now, more so than ever I have ever seen in, you know, my long career. There's people that have been in the business longer than I have. You have got to work in tandem, tight. I mean, whoever your lender is, if you've got a tight relationship with that lender, it's got to be copacetic.
Right.
Like, you guys have to be talking every few days, at least texting. Have to, because that approval date is crucial. The contract is crucial. The appraisal is vital. And consumers cannot take time off.
Right.
Cannot take time. And I have a, before I forget, I'm going to ask, I have a Nathaniel-ism pet peeve that I really want to share with you that's really important to me.
Okay.
And I hope this doesn't, if it makes me look bad, I apologize,
but I'm
going to be
now.
Transparent. Yes. Let me do it. Okay. So here's the thing. If I talk to a consumer, the only thing I ask of my agents is please make sure that that consumer is in a place where they're sitting down with a piece of paper and a notepad and they're taking notes. I talk to consumers so many times when they're in Walmart or Publix or traveling, and I'm slinging numbers at them.
Right.
And I'm supporting you as an agent, or most lenders will support their agent and say, here's the things you need to know about the process.
Mm-hmm.
And consumers sometimes forget it or they're not connected to it. We need to make sure that we're all working, and it's got to happen fast.
Right.
So,
when you guys are connected like this, you're working as a team, and we're hit that approval deadline, you know, it's 30 days or 21 if they reduce it, you're able to provide either an extension of the loan approval period or denial letter, correct?
Yes. So the denial letter has to happen if a consumer fails to meet their obligations on what's required, or we get information that shows that they don't qualify for that loan based on what we had pre-approved. If a consumer just failed, if they're being not willing to turn in information, that would render a file incomplete.
Right.
At a certain period of time, if we have to render a decision, we may incomplete that file. Or, you know, if the consumer says, hey, listen, I apologize. I told you I'm going to have $30,000 for closing. Now I only have $21,000. Then that would result in a decline.
Right. And after we pass the approval deadline and we're in paragraph 5 of the contract, if needed to be, there's an automatic extension in paragraph 5A. For CFPB, what triggers that and what can you do to say, hey, this is an automatic extension for the buyer. We're going to extend this to close
the loan. This is actually kind of a simple one. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, that extension by the CFPB is designed for the closing disclosure. A consumer must be in possession of a closing disclosure 3 days prior to closing. So that is a little bit on the lender. The lender needs to be responsible to make sure that they're navigating that time frame. If a lender fails to deliver that, they could execute. You could execute that clause, but it's not the consumer's fault necessarily.
Right.
I think an agent needs to, or a lender needs to make sure they're advising their agent and the consumer.
Right.
I don't have what I need, so I can't get a closing disclosure out. We do need to extend the contract. We should even wait until that triggering that clause.
Right. As long as the buyer is Johnny on the spot, they don't drop the ball. They do and deliver everything you need in time. There's still a protection there for an automatic extension, as long as it's not a buyer's default.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Other agents, they ask about the FHA VA loan, the non-allowables.
Yes.
That used to be 200, 500. And
1%.
This, 1%.
Yeah, it's 1% now, yeah.
And what about in this market where sellers, like, it's so hot, they don't want to pay anything. They want to
like termite.
Yes, like termite or anything on the loan. What can you do so there's no closing costs to the seller?
This is where having a very close – and again, this is not about me. This is about you agents and your relationship with your lender, having a tight relationship with your lender. You know, in some cases, you are finding that lenders are going to have to waive some of their fees. Many lenders have them, and many of them do waive their fees.
Right.
So it doesn't affect the non-allowables. And then, of course, the termite. I have heard that where sellers don't want to pay for the termite. Well, the lender's going to be required to pay for that.
That's good to know. The other thing, too, right now – FHA, not so much of a problem, but with VA, competing against cash offers, competing against conventional loans, and there's appraisal gap clauses that they put in here.
Yes.
And I know with VA, they're pretty strict, even though you put on the contract that says buyer agrees to pay the difference.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to hold the seller or the buyer to that. Just because
with
the
VA,
of the writer.
And you're referring to VA, yes. So VA has an amendatory clause, or we call it an escape clause. And basically what, and that's ironclad. That is a VA requirement.
There's no way to change that. Not
you
on
can't,
the contract.
Nope. If that appraisal comes in under value, that veteran can get out. So really what you could have is there may be some additional addendums you can create where a buyer agrees that at a certain number, they're just going to pay the differential. That's fine. And as long as we have something in writing reflecting that the veteran is aware that they're paying above that, that's okay. That overshoots, because you have to have something in writing with the escape clause or the amendatory clause where the veteran is saying, I'm willing to pay over this price. Even though it appraises this number, I'm prepared to pay over that. So we do need something in writing.
And that's more of a handshake. But that clause supersedes anything you write in the contract.
And that's because it's a VA loan. So, yes, that's true.
Going back to your financing stuff, you guys offer amazing programs. Could you talk about some of your first-time homebuyer program funds, what's available?
A lot of stuff out there. You know, my heart goes out to, again, I serve at the National Association of Hispanic Realtors. It's a wonderful organization, and I serve on the government affairs front. And we do a lot for affordable housing and NIMBYism and immigration and things like that. It's a great group. And one of the challenges we have is of course, affordable housing.
Right.
First-time homebuyers fit into that bucket. There's a lot of wonderful programs out there. There's still down payment assistance programs, and they're great products. City of St. Petersburg, City of Tampa has programs as well. Watch out for them. Read between the lines very, very carefully. It's not free money. I get calls from people and they think, oh, the county's giving me money and it's free. There are catches to it.
What is that? You got to live in the house for 5 years?
So it depends on the program, and they kind of go up and down a little bit. But yes, generally you have to live in the home for 5 years. If not, you got to pay it all back. And you also have to be very careful that there may be some additional provisions to that as well. So read the guidelines carefully. Also, it's not just available for anybody. You got to have there's minimum credit score requirements. They change, so check with your lender on that. There's minimum credit score requirements and debt to income ratio. You have to watch out for that. So,
and when they do apply for this on the contract, they really should let the seller know just in case there's a little delay, correct? Because sometimes these loans can delay the.
It can, yes. If you're trying to fit somebody within we do a lot of rescores for consumers. So if you have to do a rescore and there's some uniqueness there, there could be some delays. I do agree with you. Generally in a contract, you can do a first-time home buyer down payment assistance program for conventional and FHA. Right. So you might start with conventional and you may end up in FHA because FHA is more flexible from ratios and credit scores.
Going back to that first-time home buyer program, when they're getting money, whether it be from St. Pete, the county, what is a time period they should really put on the contract from to close date?
So that's a great question. Generally, I mean, look, when it comes to down payment assistance program, the lender has to be certified to do it. So the lender can approve it themselves. I mean, if you're working with a fast lender, it could be done in 30 days or less. You know, if it's maybe with a lender that requires a little more time, maybe 45 days. But the down payment assistance program itself, if the buyer did their part, it should go very quickly. Now, there's other programs, Fred. There's things like Chinoa, which is 100% financing. And then there's a lot of, lot of programs that just require only 3% down. I would like to recommend to homeowners so that you're not in a jam. Because here's my real concern. My concern is, even though we have a lot of people working from home, they've lifted this no mask rule in the state of Florida. Right. There is some rumblings out there that I'm hearing from a lot of people that I know in my circle of influence that are business professionals. They're going to make their people come back to work.
Right.
So if you've got to come back to work, you may have like gotten a home hypothetically out in Spring Hill because you got a great buy. But if you got to commute back to Tampa, you might be selling that home. You may not have a choice.
Unless you're working with a tech company, you're going to come back.
You may have to. So that's the one thing that I would say you have to be careful. And we didn't talk about short sales, but if there was a fear of short sales, it would be that. People having to come back to work have to sell their home quickly. They paid a premium to get into that home, and now they got to get out fast. So there may be some, the margin or the equity may not be there for that home, maybe.
Right. That's a concern. Short sales, going back to the forbearance now.
Yes.
That's getting ready to end. Do you see more homes coming on the market?
Absolutely. I don't see a way around that. Right. If you took the ride and you know your mortgage payment was $2,000 a month and you're $24,000 in the hole and you got to pay in full, if you can't renegotiate with your lender to do a modification where you roll that balance into the back of the loan, which can be done, but if that's not an option, then yes, I don't see what you're going to do other than you're going to be forced to sell that property. So that I think the bigger issue there is, will the lender modify or not? If the lender won't modify, yes, more homes in the market, but I do see some more inventory opportunity as a result of that.
So that should help a little bit with the inventory, but
a little bit. It's not going to be drastic.
It's not going to be a relief.
I wouldn't hang my shingle on that one, no.
But what other loan programs are you offering for investors, stated income?
So there's a lot of great products out there. Bank statement loans are great for self-employed borrowers. There's some products out there that don't require you to verify your income or employment.
Is that 12 months or 24 months?
Both. There's a 12 and 24. The 24 is better. It'll offer a lower interest rate than a 12. Think about risk. You know, obviously, if you can verify your income, your bank statements over 24 months, you're going to get a better rate than 12.
Does that mean you have one bank account that you just put the money in and then you take it and put it back to the other bank? Or you guys really look in the paperwork?
Oh, no, we look at the paperwork. We look at you have to be fiscally responsible. You know, some of them are business bank statements, some of them are personal. So there's more of an accounting forensic thing that needs to happen there. And then there's no income, no ratio loans, where you don't have to verify your income. Those are more for business purposes, for like investment transactions.
Right. Getting off the topic, I want to know what Nathaniel, what do you do for fun? You skydive? What's going on here?
Oh wow, that's so I do play ice hockey. So I like play ice hockey. I am
Bolts.
The Bolts. Yeah, absolutely Bolts. I was a Ranger fan for years, and I got to go with the Bolts. So ice hockey, I play in a band, so I'm a musician as well too. And really, that's about it. That and also submerse myself in the mortgage business and government affairs. I really love this this business. And I'll tell you, it's interesting. I mean, it's gonna be a long time before people are gonna pay cash for their homes.
Right.
So this is a crucial market, but that's really all I do. I like to read too. I'm a big reader, and I think you know, Fred. I'm also, I'm a certified trainer and teacher in emotional intelligence and disprofiling. So if anybody gets a chance to take one of our classes
I'm getting
here,
profiled here,
you are getting profiled. I gotta say the high
sign me
eyes
up for can, the band lessons.
We can do that. Yeah. Do you play the kazoo well?
I don't hold a tune well, but I can learn.
I'm gonna bring in a whole stack of kazoos for it. We're gonna get Brian to play the harmonica. So we'll start our own band, Charles Ruttenberg.
Well,
CCR band.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Well, Nathaniel, thank you. Thank you, the agents, for tuning in and everybody else tuning in. Please tell your friends about us, all the great informative information you learn. And we're going to take this by storm.
We want to add one last thing. Let's remember that we have some great branch managers out there, Mike Getz and Rhonda Smith and their team. You might see Maurice Johnson or Josh Corbin out there at one of the classes.
They're all so good. It's hard
to pick
them.
They're wonderful. You just, whoever you feel good with, but they're out there. So we have a great team. And I want to just a big plug to my team, Rhonda, Mike, Josh, Maurice. You're all awesome. So
it's the best
thanks
crew.
For all they do.
It's the they're dream
awesome.
Team. Best crew I ever
Thank
ran
you.
Into.
Thank you.
So I vouch for that. And that's why I'm so happy when I call your name. I know I don't get phone calls back. They do. If anything
they'll
goes wrong,
back.
The person that refers that company out, they hear about it. Then I got to fix it.
Oh, you're saying if it's our team,
I never hear about you guys.
No complaints.
When
right,
I refer
good.
You guys out, they want closing costs paid. They want something from me.
So you've never heard somebody say they saw me playing out and I was out of tune with my guitar?
No,
that's cool. I'll take that.
Yeah, you guys are hitting 100%,
right,
which is amazing. So very impressed.
All right, thank you.
And we're looking forward to having you back on here. You're going to bring a special guest with you next
time. I am.
Time.
We're going to do an emotional intelligence segment on disprofiling. Now, I hope everybody can attend for that. Robin Lavich will be our guest. So, and also, please be on the lookout, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be doing an emotional intelligence behavioral science segment coming up. So watch out for that live
class. It's going to be a deep dive. It's going to make them better. It's going to tell them what they need to concentrate on. Not going to want to miss
that. How to deal with frantic people. How to get out of the way of frantic people and people that become disruptive.
Oh, I
and
love
how to
that.
Tune
it's
them
help
down
me out.
To be able to create more time for you. So that's
Absolutely.
The key to get you
and more time
unhinged.
For me.
More time for you.
Okay.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah,
you
I'm going to be beating the drums or coming to that class.
That's it. Yeah, all I want is a cup of coffee with Byron. So
sounds good. Well, thank you everyone
thank you.
For tuning in. We really appreciate you and we'll look forward to having everyone back here for the next show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Integrity Title and Guarantee for making this happen. I'd like to thank Nathaniel Bittman for joining us today. And most of all, I'd like to thank you agents. You guys make this podcast possible. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next time.
This is a Charles Ruttenberg Realty podcast from Gulf Coast to Space Coast. This podcast is sponsored by Integrity Title and Guarantee Agency, LLC, where integrity is guaranteed.